In the journey of life, sometimes we feel like we're trekking alone through the desert with sand in our shoes and the sun bearing down. It's lonely, it's quiet, and it feels like we're getting nowhere. Well, today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll continues his biographical study of Moses. In the book of Exodus, we'll observe his decades of anonymity, shepherding his father-in-law's sheep in the land of Midian. Moses' time in the desert teaches us profound lessons about our own walk with God. Chuck titled his message, The Desert, School of Self-Discovery.
Well, tonight I want to talk about something that is painful, but it is essential in our walk with the Lord. I am referring to how the Lord handles some of His children. It seems the longer I live, the more I realize most of His children in preparing them for His purpose. Specifically, I'm talking about times in the desert. I am referring to the school in which God places His children to prepare them for a particular task. Now, there's no way that I can paint this attractive or colorful, glamorous, beautiful. It was never designed to be. I'm talking about the desert, not in February. I'm talking about the desert in July. I am not talking about Palm Springs kind of desert, okay? I'm talking about the kind of desert in the midst of the Mojave or the Sahara. The place of heat, the place of barrenness, the place where you are not productive. As we get into the subject, it helps me, as it may help you, to know that the Hebrew word for desert is midbar. It's from a verb, davar, meaning to speak. I find that significant. The desert is the place where God speaks, communicates to us a message. We could not otherwise hear what He has to say if it were not for the desert. Because the desert is a place that strips from you all the things that you hang on to for comfort. All the things that you have felt you needed through life, but you didn't need, because they were the things that kept you from hearing God speak. To begin with, let us look at Deuteronomy 32 as we observe a couple of verses here and another in Deuteronomy before we turn back to the man who incarnates all of these principles, Moses. And now, as you find Deuteronomy, let me say to you that your desert probably will not be literally a desert. God does not call many of His children to live in the midst of the Mojave or the Sahara. But your desert might be caring for the aged over an extended period of time without relief. It might be confinement in some capacity. It might be ill health that suddenly overtakes you and stays with you for an undetermined, undisclosed period of time. It is that which brings personal pain or hardship or heartache. That's the desert. It may be a loss of a loved one by death or by another lover. It may be a broken romance. It may be a divorce. It may be moving from an area that you're very familiar with to an area that you know no one, and you are away from all of the ones that you love and long to hear and to see, to be with. The desert wears many clothes. May be a failure at school or at work. It may be a boring, thankless job, but that's your calling. That's the desert. Now, in Deuteronomy 32, we have a direct reference to the nation Israel, but I want to apply it immediately to your life and mine. Deuteronomy 32:10, he found him in a desert land. Technically, the him is a reference to the Jews. But by application, let's place your name in place of him. God found you in a desert. Please notice God found you in a desert. Notice that. God is spending his time finding his children in a desert, and he is finding the right desert for his children. There's a difference. Some of you would respond beautifully to one situation, whereas to someone else it would be a desert experience. Some of you would long for a time of aloneness where you can be quiet. But for others of you, it would be a back-breaking hardship to spend time alone. And so what applies to one does not apply to another. Your desert will not be someone else's desert, but God is finding the desert you need so that he might strip you of the crutches and build into your life through the process of a painstaking education, qualities of character you would not otherwise gain. Now, he found him in a desert land. This word is Midbar, a place to talk to you. In the howling waste of a wilderness. Wow, that is descriptive, isn't it? The howling of the desert comes from the animals as well as from the wind. I was in a desert yesterday afternoon. I was asked to be a part of a group of men who met with their pastor to talk about their church. They were appraising the situation. They're discouraged in that area. And it took me across a desert to get to that place of rendezvous where we might meet together with these men. And in the midst of the drive, I just pulled off the road and took a little side road away from the highway and turned the motor off. And I got out of the car, and I took a walk several feet, perhaps 100, 200, 300 feet away from the car. And it was all, I was all alone, and I just stood there. And there was a howling in the desert. The biting sand, the heat, it came upon me as I stood there, and I sensed there is an awesomeness in the desert. It was uncomfortable. It bit into my skin. It was barren. No fruit. No shrubbery. No lush, beautiful, verdant trees or valleys. No oasis. It was a desert. And God finds the howling desert that you need. And once he finds it, he puts you into it. And the instant feeling that you get is, God's gone. Where is he? In the midst of this painful experience, you're no longer able to do things you once were able to do. And there's the fear, I'm going to lose my talent. Or I'm no longer going to be useful. Or I'm forgotten. He's left me. Now, that's why I wanted you to look at this verse. Look at verse 10. In the howling waste of a wilderness, God does four things. Circle them, will you? First of all, he encircles us. Second, he cares for us. Third, he guards us as the pupil of his eye. Isn't that beautiful? You know the most protected part of your body is that pupil of the eye. You won't let anything touch it. You guard it with great care. You protect it constantly. The tiniest speck you keep from getting into it if you can. In the desert, you are the pupil of God's eye. And to your amazement, this evening, you discover, in fact, God has not left you. He has cared for you now more than at any other time. I want that to encourage you, especially you who are in the desert. And the fourth thing he does, verse 12, he alone guides you. He hasn't taken his hand off of you. He is guiding you. And I like that word, alone. There's no one else to guide when you're in the desert. There's no neat little place to find shade or relief. And so you are naked. You are shut up to God. For some of you, it may be a past of great success and good training, and suddenly you find yourself surrounded by a house full of little children. And you wonder, how long? How long? Others of you may have enjoyed good health and strength through most of your life, and suddenly the doctor tells you, you know, I noticed there's a spot on your lung. Or I've discovered as a result of surgery and this biopsy, there's a malignancy here. And the feeling is, as you reel with that information, where is God? How can I cope? How can I handle this? For others, it's being benched because an underclassman can play better than you on the team. It's as simple as that. There are a number of you here who are single. I came across a piece in Eternity that was a part of an article on rejection. The writer, Natalie Ray, says this. She calls it No Lover. No lover makes my kiss his daily quest. No hand across the table reaches mine. No precious baby nestles at my breast. No one to need my love. Where is the sign that God, my Father, loves me? Surely He creates this wealth of love to overflow. How could it be that none who wanted me has become mine? Why did I tell them no? But do they really matter, all the whys? Could all the answers take away the pain, or all the reasons really dry my eyes? Though from heaven's court, no, I would weep again. My God, You saved me from hell's black abyss. Oh, save me from the tyranny of bitterness. You see, the desert can be that response of one that you love, and he's gone, or she's gone. And there's no promise that that one will ever return. It may be the day that you come in from work and your wife has left you the note, she's gone. Then the desert starts. Or you discover through a chain of events that your husband has been, in fact, unfaithful. That's a desert. And the most disillusioning time, the greatest time of building resentment and bitterness, as this is said, is at those moments. But I want you to see, for the purpose of encouragement, that God does four things when you are in the desert. He encircles you. He cares for you. He guards you like the pupil of His eye. And in fact, He guides you. You haven't left Him, nor has He left you. Perhaps more than ever before, He is closer to you. Now, en route to Exodus chapter 2, will you stop off at Deuteronomy chapter 8, back several chapters? Yes, God tailor makes the desert for each one of us. And He tells us in verse 2 why He does it. You know, I am gaining a real close affinity with Moses, and I am discovering that he's quite a friend, quite a brother. I have thought just this afternoon, as I was putting the final touches on what I wanted to say tonight, I thought, How interesting of God to put Moses through 40 years in a desert and to turn right around and lead him to the children of Israel, who were then led to 40 years in the desert under his leadership. Have you thought about that? He had 40 years in the desert so that he might know how to lead the people of God in a desert. And that's what he's saying to them in verse 2 of chapter 8. At the end of those 40 years, here's his message. You shall remember all the way which the Lord your God has led you in the wilderness these 40 years. Three reasons. First, that he might humble you. Second, that he might test you. Third, to know what was in your heart, that he might reveal to you, you. You ever thought of that? The desert is given you that you might be humbled, tested so as to be strengthened, and discovered. Not that God might come to know you, but that you might come to know you. And there's nothing like the desert to help you discover the real you. When you strip away all of the trappings, you peel off all of the masks, and you get down to the raw cutting edge of Thursday afternoon, Friday night, Saturday morning, Monday afternoon, Tuesday noon, on and on through the week, ad infinitum, week after week, then you begin to discover who the real you is. That's what it did to Moses. And that's what it will do for you. It will humble you. It will show you your strengths and weaknesses. It will help you discover yourself. That's why I call this message the school of self-discovery, the desert. It is a hymn in our book, which I was hoping would be requested tonight, but it wasn't. It's an old hymn, almost 200 years old. And one stanza in it that is my favorite says, "When through fiery trials thy pathway shall lie, my grace all sufficient shall be thy supply. The flame shall not hurt thee." Now listen to that. "The flame shall not hurt thee. I only design thy dross to consume, thy gold to refine." God never puts the blast furnace on us in the desert to ruin us. He does it to refine us. And in the midst of the desert, as the sand bites and cuts and eats away, you suddenly become refined. Correction, not suddenly, but in the process of time, you are refined. I don't know about you, but in my past, I have had the joyful experience of rubbing shoulders with men who have been tempered in the desert, and there is no one like that. The most secure, genuinely humble, godly, gracious, honest men one can imagine. It took the desert to do it. Now then, Moses, chapter 2 of Exodus, is in the desert. And verse 15 tells us that it was the Midian desert. You recall the story. When Pharaoh heard of this matter, that is his premature act of murdering the Egyptian, Pharaoh tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from the presence of Pharaoh and settled in the land of Midian and sat down by a well. Now, if you're adventuresome at heart, you would perhaps think, "My, that sounds like a picturesque place." Get a book down sometime and do a little work on the desert of Midian. You'd have to look far and wide to find a picturesque area, believe me, unless you like sand and rocks. Look down to verse 1 of chapter 3. Moses was pasturing the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. He was in the shadow of Sinai. Moses led that old flock of woolies back to the west side of the desert. And there he stood near Sinai. I have a large book that describes in picture and narrative form God's wilderness, which is the surrounding desert near and beyond Sinai. One picture that I've studied recently is the most barren of the group, where the writer says, as he was in this place, time stood still. It is an area of no shrubbery. It is as flat and barren as the carpet beneath your feet, except it is hot, and there are large chunks of rocks that seem as though they have been placed like a divine masonry work would place it here and there. You could hardly step where you wouldn't step on a big chunk or a rock in the sand. It is just the end of the earth. Moses was in the backside of the desert. The Hebrews had an interesting way of referring to location. They faced the east, and everything behind them, the west area, was called the backside. North, south, east, and west were determined on the basis of the direction they stood, and they faced east to determine what was north, south, east, or west. Moses was in the west side, or the back side of the desert. Someone has said that it was here he got his BD degree, backside of the desert. Now, he didn't come there as a tourist. He didn't come to have a fun week of riding camels and collecting rocks and taking a few Polaroid shots of Sinai as he was on his way back to the land of Canaan. No, Moses came to live. And there's a difference. Have you traveled enough to have had that experience of coming to a barren place and said to your friend or your mate, "Boy, aren't you glad we don't live here? It's just nice to visit and move right on." Well, Moses came to the Midian desert and he unloaded his sea bag, and that's where he lived. As a matter of fact, he knew no one. His location was the Midian desert. His vocation was not very attractive. He was a shepherd for his father-in-law. And along with being that, look up at verse 21 of chapter 2. He was willing to dwell with that man. So he lived with his father-in-law, who gave him the daughter Zipporah, so he was a husband, and she gave him a son, so he was a father. Acts 7:29 tells us she gave him two sons altogether. So Moses, in his vocation, had three roles. First, a husband. Second, a father. And third, a shepherd. Can you believe it? A man who was in the advanced technical knowledge of hieroglyphics, who had studied science to the place of being the Pharaoh elect, was now in the backside of the desert, raising two sons, living with his father-in-law, and driving sheep. Now that's a desert. The writer of Robust in Faith, Sanders, says this: time is no object with God, who demands quality at all costs. There is therefore no point in chafing under the discipline of the training years, or in endeavoring to take a shortcut. It will inevitably prove to be a cul-de-sac. Did you hear that? If you try to shortcut your desert, you will lead yourself into a cul-de-sac. And because I live on one, I can tell you it will send you right back to where you came from. You cannot go through. You've got to turn around and go back.
From his classic biography on Moses, originally delivered many years ago, you're listening to the Bible teaching of Chuck Swindoll. And this is Insight for Living. Chuck titled today's message, The Desert, School of Self-Discovery. It's the fifth message in a 20-part series, and although Chuck's study of Moses was recorded nearly 50 years ago, the timeless wisdom of this Old Testament story never ages. And you can purchase all 20 CDs today. By owning these recordings, you'll be able to listen at your own pace and share these sermons with friends and family as well. The title of the complete series is Moses, A Man of Selfless Dedication. To purchase the complete collection of CDs, call us at 800-772-8888. You can also listen to this teaching series on the Insight for Living mobile app, which is available through your favorite app store. But that's not all, because Insight for Living has a Bible study on Moses. It's a spiral-bound workbook that contains 20 chapters, one for each sermon that Chuck presents. Many of our listeners have used this Bible study to guide their conversation in a small group, and of course, it's perfectly suited for your personal devotions as well. To purchase the Searching the Scriptures Bible Study Workbook for Moses, go to insight.org/workbooks. Well, just a few weeks ago, Chuck celebrated his 90th year of life. At this milestone, and after 26 incredible years as the senior pastor of Stonebriar Community Church, Chuck has stepped down from his role at the church to embrace a new chapter of ministry. With his youthful spirit and energizing perspective, he's excited to dive deeper into his calling here at Insight for Living. And Chuck is thrilled about continuing his ministry efforts. To access the resources I mentioned earlier, or to learn more about Chuck's next chapter in ministry, just go to insight.org. I'm Bill Meyer, inviting you to join us when Chuck Swindoll describes what he calls the Desert School of Self-Discovery, Tuesday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, The Desert School of Self-Discovery, was copyrighted in 1975, 1978, 1981, 1985, 1998, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.